There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over the hour. Phone number 343-0106. 343-0106. Segment of the show brought to you by Harry's. Been shaving with Harry's for years now, and I love, of course, the shave. The keystone to the whole thing is the fact that the blades give you a good shave. But now here comes the pretty cool window dressing. The convenience of having those blades show up in my house every month, so I don't have to remember that. One less thing on my remember to-do list, and also the price, half the price of what you're paying at the grocery store or the pharmacy right now for those replacement blades. 10 million of us are out shaving with Harry's, so get on board. Right now, Harry's has a special deal for y'all. This is the best deal I've seen in all the years. You'll get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and travel cover for $3. Plus free shipping when you use code MOBILE at harrys.com. This is a limited time offer, and Harry's has a special offer for y'all. Once again, new customers, so I don't get this deal, but new customers, y'all get a $5 off trial set from Harry's when you use code MOBILE at harrys.com. That means you get the razor, the weighted handle, the foaming shave gel, the travel cover, all $3. Plus free shipping when you use code MOBILE at checkout at harrys.com. Go to harrys.com today. Use code MOBILE at checkout. Claim your offer and let them know I sent you. Help support Midday Mobile and get a great shave and the convenience of Harry's. All right, it is Ash Wednesday, and we are looking back at Mardi Gras 2019, and no better man to do that with than Steve Joynt from the Mobile Mask in studio and still standing here after how many consecutive days of Mardi Gras? Even on the rain day last week, you went over to New Orleans.
Present.
Present. That's right. You're here. You're here. Not saying you're feeling great, but you're here.
I'm going to try very hard not to sit here and just moan.
Yesterday was cold for Fat Tuesday, but it was pretty. Nothing like the soaker we got for Joe Kane Day.
Oh man, Joe Kane Day. That was epic.
Yeah,
it really was. I mean that, and we kept watching it on radar. Here's it come, and bum 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 bum. Here it comes.
Well, they move, yeah.
And you get a little bit of rain, and it's like that's not the big one yet.
Right.
And you get some more rain. That's not the big one yet. And then, holy cow, yeah, that's the big one.
Well, the city had moved the Joe Kane procession floats, moved everything up some to get it started early. It could have started probably 2 hours earlier and been, you know, clear.
Well, could it have? That's the question.
No, it's good.
Can everybody get their act together to move it up? You know, I think I've certainly heard and seen people criticizing the decision to go ahead with it. I think possibly with a forecast like that, when you're looking at that forecast of 75, 80, 90% chance of storms, they pretty much are pretty sure something bad is coming. And I think at that point you have to consider canceling.
Yeah, and they're looking at the radar.
The problem with Joe Kane, on the too big to fail scale, Joe Kane is almost too big to cancel. I think, and so that has something to do with it. It shouldn't. I think a lot of us wound up being in a not safe situation before it was all over, and so that maybe has to be examined.
And I wonder if it's just. I hate for there to be a policy. Because when there's a policy,
right.
You get that kind of zero tolerance and things are canceled or moved when
right.
there's no reason to.
Right.
I do like the idea of, on the morning of, looking at the best forecast and
sure.
making the decision.
And they're very big at watching the radar.
Right.
But, brother, that line was coming. Everybody right. could see that line coming on the radar, and that's and I think they thought maybe they could slip it in underneath and mm-hmm. and it would be over. Well, it caught us right in the middle, mm-hmm. right in the middle.
So what does that do to two big days and I guess three big days in numbers for downtown? Of course, Fat Tuesday, Joe Kane Day, and Saturday. Before the Saturday, MOT Saturday. I know there's about floral parade and all that, but ending with the MOTs in downtown. Those are the three big ones. Let's kind of look through those numbers, and weather probably makes a big difference because I think that Saturday number was pretty high, as MPD said, for attendance.
Oh, no. Saturday. Oh, yeah. Oh, Saturday. Saturday was high.
Yeah, Saturday was good, and then Sunday, of course, with Joe Kane Day was anemic.
Tiny, yeah. And which goes to show you that most people took the forecasts more seriously than the people who said, okay, let's roll.
Right.
So that says something, too.
Because there's years, I can't quote numbers like you can out of your head, but there's years when we have pretty weather for Joe Kane Day. Joe Kane Day can be huge in numbers.
Oh, Joe Kane Day is often bigger than Fat Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
It often happens that way, particularly if there's a tiny little difference in weather between the two. But, yeah, it's not unusual. It's not at all unusual for Joe Kane Day to hit over 100K.
Yeah.
Last year, it was small because it was raining all day. It was mm-hmm. like 16,000. This year, it was like 5,000 and change.
Right, very low. Was,
and I have to wonder, too, as they were riding that whole course, the deluge came about halfway through. Mm-hmm,
about halfway through.
And so does that mean that every single checkpoint from the through the second half of the route was zero.
Yeah, might be empty.
Because everybody ran away.
Yeah.
I know that's what happened where I was.
Yeah.
And I was in a place where there were tents set up and people could run on up under tents. They didn't have to run three blocks to find shelter. So I think that's the reason that the number was so small. But I did see the number for yesterday and we broke 100,000.
So what? Yeah. So it
MOTs
good, yeah.
MOTs came out as the big turnout at 133, I believe.
Right. So Saturday night was the biggest number, but yeah, not too far behind for Fat Tuesday yesterday. Running through the entirety of Mardi Gras. I mean, I don't know if you don't score these by number, but not a bad showing.
Not bad. We broke 100K for the Condé Cas, which is almost unheard of. It's always high, but 100K.
You're right.
And I attribute that to the weather was very nice. I was wearing shorts and T-shirt. And it was so late. I mean, the defining characteristic of this season is how late it was. So I think people, by the time Condé Cas rolled around, are like, I just can't wait to get Mardi Gras started.
Right, right, yeah, because
so
it was
waiting.
Yeah.
So there was this finally kind of attitude about, getting out there.
Right.
And I think that was a big part of the fact that the Pharaohs hit 100,000 the next
that's
night.
That's right. I forgot.
The next night, which is unheard of. That I asked the Pharaohs president, have you guys ever broken 100,000? He said, I don't think so.
All right. So with those, still pretty good. I mean, with weather issues, you just rolled out four days that it was over 100,000.
Over 100,000.
So with that being said, Mardi Gras is, obviously alive and well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Live and well. But going
number of organizations tells you that.
Well, that's what I was going to get to. And we come back from the break. I want to talk about that as you wrap up this season. The changes coming in the next couple years, do they have a chance of making it even healthier? Or are they messing with the golden goose when you start changing different parade routes, different things happening, more organizations? Are more organizations equal more people? Or does it splinter the groups to where parade has, everybody at it? We're coming right back. More with Steve Joynt, Mobile Mask, right here on Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 120 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. My buddy Steve Joynt for the Mobile Mask in studio, recapping Mardi Gras 2019, and still copies you can pick up of Mobile Mask.
Absolutely. I will be gathering them up in the next, starting very soon, but for the next few days at least, you can still get them at all locations. And there are several locations that will carry them all year.
Okay.
So, and we'll I'll change the list on the website when that happens. I'll say, here's where you can get, here's the, you know, handful of stores where you can still get it all year long.
I want to look at a couple more things. I want to get kind of a broader scope.
Have I told you my bruise count is now 8?
How'd you get from what?
Oh, man. But stuff being flung at me while I'm taking pictures and stuff.
That's true. You're in a situation. So I had a child on my shoulders, and I want to get into this because somebody's asking about numbers for Monday night. I had a child on my shoulders during IM, and because of that and locking the child's legs behind my arms, right, to make sure they wouldn't fall, at that point, you have given up all ability to defend yourself.
Yeah.
And I took some hits there because you're like, it's coming towards me, but I have the child. I can't let go of the child.
You are what the NFL calls a defenseless player.
This is exactly what I was targeting on me. Let's talk about that Monday night because somebody was texting. Guy, numbers for the IMs were pretty low on Monday night.
I'm struggling to remember.
I think it was
remember.
Like 2 or 3,000 out is what I think I remembered seeing from MPD, and I can pull
was
that.
Was it that low?
Yeah, you know, and they get in this trap. The Monday thing is tough because I think depending on how Joe Kane Day was and how people are planning that, for a lot of people that aren't true troopers going to everything, they'll take that day off because they'll say, you know, they got to do stuff like work and sleep and do those things.
Go to
school, and if they're going to have a big day on Fat Tuesday.
Right, because you're making plans, you're packing coolers, you're doing, you know, you got stuff to do Monday night to get ready for Tuesday. And I will point out, though, the MLK parades, they hit over 100,000.
Did they?
Yeah. I mean, and that's always, it's always a big crowd. It's always between 75 and 90-something, but 100,000, that's a lot for them.
Okay, you're describing now, so we're going more, we got at least 5 now, 100,000 turnouts.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal, obviously, for all the merchants and all the people downtown. The number of people I saw was real, because I paid attention this year. I'd hear somebody's accent, and I'd say, hey, where are y'all from, or whatever. And people that weren't from around here at the parades, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
This idea that people did travel in. Either they had family here as their first Mardi Gras or something, but they came in and they were doing Mardi Gras. I thought that was good. So obviously this is a big deal for people outside of just us right here on the Northern Gulf Coast to come here. So you got to protect this thing. I mean, this is one of the discussions now for the rest of the year, not the fun and partying of Mardi Gras. It's the business of Mardi Gras and how you make sure it keeps growing and growing and growing.
Right. And you know, I'll be honest. I definitely heard some people griping about some of the changes this year, that there's too many routes to keep track of and all this kind of thing.
We're down to what, F or G or A, B, C, D, F, G?
The city took it up to I.
Okay.
I'm not even paying attention to I itself. H was designated to the weird little thing the MOTs were doing, which, frankly, I just considered A plus a weird thing on the beginning. And so I didn't adopt either. G, that was a legitimate new route.
Okay, but what we're getting to is some of these new routes are as Mystic groups are moving dens and floats and stuff, moving their, and maybe eventually for their own balls to be able to be held at their dens and facilities.
That is certainly, for example, what the IMs are working toward. Although, and as long as the Civic Center stays open, though, I think they're going to delay that kind of stuff. Because, and for example, the IMs, they're still working on, that facility's not even finished.
Right, but you hear talk from a lot of mystic groups that they are considering being responsible for all that, because that tells me they don't think the Civic Center is going to be here forever.
They have to plan for it, particularly the ones that can. I think they're going to make that change regardless.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't think. I've had somebody who knows what he's talking about say, you know, when the IMs move their ball, it's not going to be a ball anymore. It's going to be something else. It won't be a ball in the sense that it is now, because of the location, because of how spread out it'll be in tents and stuff like that. It won't carry the same.
Okay.
Rules and cachet of a ball.
I mean, but I could turn around and say, okay, well, that doesn't really matter to the bigger business for the city, because still folks come down, they don't care, you know, they don't care anything about the ball.
Agreed.
But if you go to the Civic Center, you go to balls, you go to these activities, there's sure a lot of people that are getting a lot of work putting on these events.
Sure.
A lot of staff.
A lot of caterers and drivers and, you name it.
So, I mean, I don't know if that gets reduced if you start moving to other venues or they just move the jobs around. You know, it's one of those questions that do they have their year made? Are there people in the service business that it's almost like Black Friday is for retail that Mardi Gras puts them, ahead for the year?
Right. Usually, if the logistics get more difficult, it means you have to hire more people. Overall, it becomes better for the economy, I guess.
So, you don't think that if tomorrow, I know it's not happened, but if tomorrow the Civic Center was gone, it would not be the undoing?
No, I think Mardi Gras itself is going to survive the apocalypse. We'll still have Mardi Gras. And, one of the things I said in my talk at the History Museum this year, I said, look, what everybody has to understand is this really isn't in the hands of government. It's not in the hands of our city leaders. It's in the hands of just plain folks who formed these organizations, and they keep this thing going. They've kept it going for over 150 years, the way that it's going now. And I did this comparison. I said, let's look 25 years ago. At this, I showed the schedule up to the stripers, and I said, let's look at it 25 years ago, and it's like half the stuff on there disappeared. I said, let's look at it 50 years ago. You had just the stripers,
right?
I mean, crazy. Right. The amount of growth that we've had just in the last 50 years.
So, logarithmic growth. I mean, if you think about, I'm just thinking about the last decade. It's been at a pace a lot faster than I think I remembered in my lifetime.
And I think we're bound to hit a plateau pretty soon. I think the police department has made it fairly clear that they feel like they're at their limit.
Really?
Just in terms of
just being able to
overtime and being able to cover everything and being able to do it right and keep everybody safe. So I don't think, and in fact, we may be looking in the next few years at a little consolidation that might cut down our number of parading days by one or two. That kind of thing.
Although, listen, as a dad and a guy who enjoys Mardi Gras, enjoys my children, I would rather go down at one point and see parade after parade after parade, right? Stack them,
right?
Than have this night and this other night and this other night,
right? We have plenty.
I know that may not be right for everybody, but you're saying self-serving for me. I would like that.
I agree. And we have plenty of one parade nights, and we have. I would say maybe three, kind of what I would call underperforming slots.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the groups themselves that underperform. I think it's the slots.
Right.
And I think perhaps moving the groups that are in those slots to better performing slots would be better for the groups and better for the city.
So you think that's a change we might see
I think that's something we might see. The police department has made a noise that they're looking. They are looking for ways to cut down on the massive amount of overtime that they spend and things like that.
All right. Well, we'll be talking about this, I'm sure, as we get ready for Mardi Gras 2020. Not a super early, but not a super late Mardi Gras 2020.
February 25th.
All right, so kind of in between. It's on the
late-ish side, I would say.
Right, but not like a full week earlier, I guess, than this year.
Yeah.
All right, and reminder too, Mobile Mask still out there. People can pick up a copy.
Heck yeah!
Find it. Go to the Facebook page. Look for those locations.
Look for those locations. I mean, just because the schedule is not much use to you now, that doesn't mean that there's a lot of stories.
It's like I quoted your MPD grid story so many times over Mardi Gras to explain how they came up with the numbers. So.
Right.
Good stuff. All right. Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We will
go home and sleep.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. Isn't it time for you to go rest up now? Isn't that how it works?
Hibernation time.
All right. Go rest up. You deserve it. It is Steve Joynt with the Mobile Mask. Hey, coming back, there's a series of meetings here locally to discuss some proposed changes to some regulations on fish, not just snapper. I know always we're talking about snapper, but we'll include some other species in this mix as well. And Scott Bannon's going to join us. Scott is with, of course, Alabama Marine Resources. He is the director, and we'll talk about that and get your commentary coming up at 343-0106, 343-0106. Check in with news and staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams coming up next.
With Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 1:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. And I saw a note here from Outdoor Alabama, also on the Facebook page for Alabama Marine Resources, about some meetings coming up for anglers to discuss proposed regulations to not just to talk about snapper, but in this case, speckled trout and flounder in the mix. So let's get some answers and talk more about this. Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joining us now. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Sean. How are you guys today?
Yeah, man, we're good. We're good. And I'm looking at this these proposed meetings coming up. First of all, lay out, what are we meeting about?
Sure. We're going to meet to discuss several different things. We had some stock assessments done for spotted sea trout, otherwise known as specks or speckled trout, and flounder. And there's a little bit of a concern for the specks that we need to maybe make some either bag limit or adjustments or a size limit adjustment to make sure that that stays a healthy, strong stock. And then flounder, we have a little bit of concern that we are seeing some downward trends, so we definitely need to do something that helps counteract that. So there are some different options on the table that that can help continue to strengthen, or will help continue to strengthen the stock and allow people to fish. So we want to get the public's input on those changes that we're considering and to see what kind of impacts they could have. So that's why we're holding these series of public meetings. And they affect different user groups differently. That's why we've divided the meetings up into commercial fishing, charter for hire, and private anglers, because they have different stakes in the game. So we want to be able to address their specific issues and not have this big monster meeting where everybody has to spend hours and hours trying to figure out each segment's issues. We're going to address them individually.
Okay, so yeah, because you have, I know that one of your meetings is for commercial anglers, federal reef fish permit holders, and seafood processors, and then you have another one for private anglers, so this will be a separate meeting.
It will, because the information is a little bit different and the way that they're regulated is slightly different. So, like I said, we want to be able to address their concerns specifically and get feedback from those groups.
All right, and let's circle back here on the list of fish, and I want to get to speckled trout in a second, but you mentioned flounder. So what is the science showing us? Because anecdotally, you've heard more than 5 year fools from anglers that feel like the flounder fishing is not what it used to be.
And that's exactly right. That's what the science shows us. The stock assessment shows us that there has been a downward trend for quite a while. We just didn't have the ability to do a true assessment. We now have that done, and it shows that we need to address it. And so for flounder, I tell people I'm willing to take a few more risks and make some a little bit more of some challenging changes so that we continue to fish in the future. I mentioned to someone, they said our job is to make sure our children fish, and I said no, my job is to make sure that your children have better fishing. And I think we can get to that. It's going to take some tough decisions, and nobody likes change. That's a given. But I think we're going to be able to make some changes that people will be able to live with, and they'll understand after coming to these meetings of why the changes are necessary, and they'll have some input on what changes and how it affects the return of this fish, hopefully, that we rebound the stock to a much stronger stock.
But what is causing the decline in the stock? Is it just anglers, and then, or is it commercial angling? And what about effects from the oil spill? Is that part of it at all?
The oil spill portion is probably still an unknown. I always tell people, I said, probably when they're about to put me 6 foot under, we may have some idea of what that total impact was from the oil spill. But this is a kind of a Gulf-wide concern that we've seen a decline in the flounder numbers. And so is it from overfishing? Is it environmental? It's tough to tell. But if we can make some changes for the anglers, both on the commercial and recreational side, and the charter for hire side would be included in the private anglers portion. In a couple of years, let's see what kind of change we see. And if we're making a positive impact, then we know that the fishing was key in that. And so our goal is to try and keep as many, for flounder, the males and the breeding females in that system, so that if we, let's say we raise the size limit, that becomes the new norm, that the size limit that we have now would be the bottom end, where people would be like, oh, I'm not even keeping them that size. I'm going to keep bigger fish because bigger fish are available to them.
Okay, so, I mean, what would that look like? What would you propose that size limit would be?
Well, right now we're looking for flounder. We have some options on the table of like 13 or 14 inches, moving up from a 12-inch size limit. The 12-inch barely has the males. That's about as big as they get. If we can keep all the males in the system, there's a benefit to that.
Is there? I mean, because usually study, you know, it's all about the, I mean, it's all about the females, because, you know, one can do the job of many. Or how in flounder, is it the same way, or are they?
It is similar. The more females that you keep in the system, the better, and the maturity of the females is naturally, it's different when you move that size limit up. So you are going to have more females, but you will exclude all the males from being caught. And it's just a little harder to collect the males and find data on the males, so we have a concern for them. But the more breeding size females that you keep in the system, the more eggs that you keep out there, the return on that investment should be good, so that down the road we're seeing you're getting closer to keeping your bag limit and you're keeping bigger fish.
But so it would be addressed, wouldn't it be addressed better, not saying that this is what everybody wants, but would it be addressed better with a bag limit restriction, and then because you overall have a better chance of females, you know, living longer and making more baby flounder?
Sure. What we really want is for them to get big enough to be very robust breeders. So that's the size limit. What we're seeing now is that most people are not getting their limit anyway. It's 10 fish per person on the recreational side of the house. And there is no limit on the commercial side, because you can have a commercial hook and line license. We have a commercial gill net fishery. And we also have a little bit of a shrimp boat bycatch where they sell. So there are no limits on that side. So we're entertaining the thought of doing that, or potentially a season closure where you close down for a certain period during the year to let those females move offshore, because that's where they go to spawn, and so they make a migration. So maybe we give them that opportunity. So there's some different aspects of the flounder fishery that we can address that potentially yield a good positive return.
And just joining us, talking with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Okay, you mentioned also probably the most popular fish to chase here along the Gulf Coast, and that's speckled trout.
Yes, they're we are not at the point where we're like, oh my goodness, we have a problem. What we're looking at is we have a concern. We're not seeing the bigger fish. We're not seeing a lot of people keep their limits. There's a thing that we call the spawning potential ratio. We haven't settled on a number for that. So it's not in a dire need, but it is on the edge of we need to address it. So if we address it now, you can make a smaller change and not get to a critical stage. We want to prevent that. We want to get ahead of the game, and trout is offering us an opportunity to do that with this recent assessment. And so, again, I think we're looking at a little bit of an increase in the size limit that potentially puts an extra 400,000 fish in the system, keeps them in the system to continue to breed. And as those females get bigger and more mature, they lay more eggs. We'll talk about a slot limit, but believe it or not, the science doesn't show that a slot limit is that beneficial because we're not getting a lot of those upper end fish.
And I want to get into details here, but explain to folks that aren't anglers, when you say a slot limit, you mean what?
When you establish a minimum and a maximum size limit, where you say the fish need to be between these two sizes, and usually the goal of that is to get those bigger, older breeding females that lay more eggs and keep them in the system. But we're really not seeing that that's going to make much of an impact. And generally, when you look at that, you would allow like a trophy fish. You would allow one fish over that size limit, much like we do the red drum fishery now.
You know, because, I mean, on my boat, this is completely anecdotal, but on my boat, I let the big ones go and keep smaller fish. I mean, by design, You know, I say, well, that one is going to be is way more important as a resource as a breeder. I don't need to kill that big fish when I can have some of these right now, 14-inch and up fish to make dinner from.
And interestingly enough, in our conversations with the public, that's a pretty common occurrence. Is you might keep the one big one because it was a trophy fish, and people mm-hmm. that don't get to fish very often might keep that bigger fish. But people that fish with any regularity, we found that to be kind of a common theme, that they're letting those bigger fish go, which is great, and that is very helpful. And that might be why we're not, you know, in the critical stage. We're just in the concern stage, if I were labeling it. But those are that's what good, responsible anglers do, I think.
All right. So if people want to come out and talk about these proposed changes, they're going to be able to stand up and say, here's what I think. Does it work that way? Or are we just listening? What goes on?
Both. We're going to present some information about the stock assessments, and then we're going to ask people to provide us some comments. And they can come and listen, and they can dwell on the information, and they can provide me an email response later on. If they don't want to provide it in public, that is fine. We'll give them some information. But we do want to hear what how people feel it will affect them.
What about snapper? What's on the table for snapper regulation?
Well, the one thing we're looking at right now is a reef fish endorsement, and there will be a fee for that. So we want to get the public's feedback on that, and it'll apply to private anglers, for-hire vessels, and commercial fishing vessels. So it requires funding to do what we do and to provide the research out in the reef zone, and we have such tremendous research that goes on. We want to continue to maintain that. We want to maintain the snapper check program, and we need to identify the user group that really does use the offshore fishing in Alabama. Right now, if you have a saltwater fishing license, you may fish the causeway and you never make it to the sand. You never make it to the beaches or go offshore, so you're not an offshore angler. We want to identify that group, and that endorsement will help us do it, and it will help us to maintain some of the research and the monitoring systems that we have in place.
Where do we stand for this 2019 season? I know you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but let's kind of run through what snapper season this year looks like.
It's going to be June 1st through the end of July. We're going to get those long weekends, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Although June 1st is a Saturday, so you only get Saturday, Sunday that weekend. We will include Thursday, the 4th of July, so you'll get a long weekend there, 4 days. And the bag limit stays the same. It's going to be 2 fish per person at 16 inches. And if the weather holds, then we'll probably just get those days. It'll be similar to the number of days we had last year. If we get bad weather days and we get opportunities missed, we'll gain those opportunities either later in the fall or later in the year. Under the EFP, the exempted fishing permit, we have the opportunity to make the adjustment and still fish. It's just under 1 million pounds again, like we did last year.
What about, before we wrap up here, speaking of reef fish, the beginning of this month, open trigger fish, 1 fish per person per day. I'll hold my opinion on that back for a while and let you tell us how that looks and will that change.
I'll go ahead and tell you my opinion. I don't like it.
There's two of us.
Where we increase that trigger fish limit. I hear all the time that once we change a limit, we never get it back. My goal is that with trigger fish, I think when the new assessment comes out this year, you're going to see some better data used. You're going to see that the stock is in better shape. And I think we're either going to get more days or we're going to get back to a 2 fish limit. We'll have to see how that plays out. But I promise you, and the anglers of Alabama, that is high on my list of priorities, is to take a good hard look at trigger fish. And we've seen some great pictures, and I know some friends that have gone trigger fishing recently, and they had great trips. And they also saw some small ones, which is great for next year.
So what is this, any chance of in the foreseeable future to having trigger fish back in season when snapper is?
Well, I think after the assessment comes out, it'll help us look at how many days you can get, and I think you'll start to see an overlap then. If you get that, may be the best way to go, is you get more days at one fish and you get the overlap, or you get more fish per day. And so it is going to be a tough decision that we'll have to have some conversations at the Gulf Council level, because we have to agree across the Gulf to make the recommendation to NOAA.
All right. Remind folks once again, if they want to get it, you know, even if they haven't written this down, these meeting times and locations, where do they go to get this information?
They can go to our Facebook page, Alabama Marine Resources, or you can go to outdooralabama.com, and it'll be on there. You can call our office at 251-861-2882, and we'll be more than happy to share the information with you.
All right. We'll be out there at the meetings and asking questions, and I sure appreciate you hopping on with us today.
Anytime. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Alabama Marine Resources Director Scott Bannon on with us. Coming right back. We'll wrap it up here. Feinbaum on the way at 2, but grab a couple calls and get through some text here. 343-0106. Y'all stay close.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 153 FM Talk 106.5. Y'all say hello to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins as we talk about this. It's, of course, Lent has started. I don't think anybody's given away, given up purchasing precious metals for Lent. And what about that? If they decided right now is the time they want to start getting into silver or gold, kind of walk us through that process, Angelo.
Well, see, that's the cool thing about what we do here. You know, with silver and gold coins, all the bullion, all those types of things, you look back historically, look back to the birth of Christ. What did the wise men bring? Some of the things were silver and gold.
That's right.
You don't have to give up those things for Lent. I've always thought that was pretty cool. So if you're giving up chocolate or coffee or God forbid, drinking for Lent, to cheer yourself up, come by Mobile Bay Coins, take a look at all the cool pieces of silver we've got here, ask lots of questions. We have so many things to choose from. It's a little overwhelming.
Okay. Well, give us directions. Come out and talk precious metals or check out all the great gift items.
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. Come by and check it out or go on to Facebook and like and follow Mobile Bay Coins there.
Hey, thanks, Angelo.
Have a good one, Sean.
You too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins. All right, 154. And yeah, I'm watching what's going on in Washington as well. My eyes are keenly fixed on Montgomery right now, but still looking out there at Washington, and we'll see what happens with Republicans and how the votes go for President Trump's emergency declaration for wall funding. Oh, speaking of the president, President Trump's going to be here in Alabama on Friday. Oh, yeah, in the... I'll get to the clip in a second. So President Trump's coming on Friday. He said he's heading to Alabama. It's a tragic situation, but a lot of good work is being done. He said it's approved the major disaster declaration for Lee County, which triggers the release of federal funds to help parts of Alabama recover. Now, reminder, too, in addition to what's going on from federal help, the Red Cross is doing their work in Lee County and going on throughout the day until, I think, it's 7 o'clock tonight. They got the phone bank going on as the telethon's happening with our news partners at WKRG, part of the Alabama Broadcasters Association. We're all working together in the state to help raise money for those folks in the communities there in Lee County, specifically Beauregard. But there are actually some, I'm seeing pictures from buddies of mine up there. There are some other areas that got ripped up by tornadoes as well. But the American Red Cross is working up there. And right now, this telethon is raising money. 100% of the proceeds go towards disaster relief and recovery efforts. If you want to do your donation, you can call the phone bank over there where they have a bunch of people staffing this at WKRG. Phone number 662-3047, 662-3047. If you're not from here, that's 251-662-3047, and you can make your donation there for the American Red Cross. Oh, yeah, and the clip from the president. This is one I saw. It wasn't even out of this story. It was out of another story, but I thought it was pretty interesting as the discussion is about the president cooperating or not cooperating with his new look into what may or may not have happened in the Trump administration. And the president was asked why he wasn't cooperating. And I just cut this clip out. This would be, I don't care if you're not a fan of President Trump or you're his biggest fan. You got to admit, this is fairly amusing.
I cooperate all the time with everybody.
This is my new favorite. That maybe somebody suggested what ringtones they would have on their phone from different things that went on the show. This one right here.
I cooperate all the time with everybody.
Maybe my new favorite. Is that, President Trump, is that what you were elected to do? Do people want you to? I don't think so. But they want you to cooperate with people all the time, everybody. But we'll see. All right. Reminder, too, and this is going to happen. The decision is going to be made in the morning. Either, let's just say this, for sure, Midday Mobile tomorrow, live from Montgomery. There, I may be able to check in during the morning show tomorrow, but for sure, this show, Midday Mobile, live from Montgomery tomorrow. Then we'll have updates during the morning show on Friday from Montgomery, and then Midday Mobile on Friday from Montgomery as well, as special session is moving on in Montgomery over this gas tax. So I'm going up there, going to do the show, actually from the office of Secretary of State John Merrill. He's put me in the broom closet there. That's cool. I'll take whatever I can get because it's got internet. And do the show up there. And we have a lot of members of our local delegation from the House and Senate stopping by to talk about exactly that, the gas tax, this special session going on. So if you get a chance, you want to drop me a note on the text line here today, or maybe send an email to Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. Sean at fmtalk1065.com. You have a specific question you want addressed by members of our local delegation, send it to me. I'll get those questions asked. I can't guarantee you the answers, but I can guarantee you the ask for sure as I take this show to Montgomery. All right, Paul Feinbaum on the way next. I will talk to you all tomorrow from Montgomery.